Coffee Time Wednesdays with the Prairie Farm Podcast.
Can't hit us with the jingle.
You gotta keep the mic close to you.
Okay, cool.
Mic check.
She's
mic
been
check.
On podcast. She knows what she's yeah. doing.
I'm a superstar.
That's right.
I was born for this life.
Man, welcome back to the Prairie Farm Podcast. Coffee Time Wednesday. We're recording on a Friday. I don't think we've ever done that before, ever. But we have a special guest here who, before they say anything, will now give you their best owl call.
Oh, you can't do this to me.
This is like new person initiation.
This is the whole real back. Okay. I don't know. Is it going to like blow up this mic then?
No.
I don't think so. It's pretty...
That's that was great.
Good. That's really good.
That was
all right,
great.
Nicholas, your best.
Yeah, put him on the spot.
Your best barn cat meow.
Those little devils.
But you have to say check me out when you do it.
What? No.
You're
no,
such
no.
a dad.
Yeah.
My goal is to make Nicholas feel as uncomfortable at all
it's
times.
Just, it's I think not going to not with the cat thing. I'm going to give you an exact impersonation of a cat.
Oh, look, a human. Someone that's so much, so far under me. Please feed me now.
That's
exactly.
Well, there would be no please in there, though. It'd be like flicking out one claw, feed me now.
Get on your knees. Yeah. You're just lucky we haven't taken over the world.
My father-in-law, Jim Paw, his brother, who he, younger brother may or may not have treated very well growing up. He had a cat that would oftentimes steal his food, and so he named his cat Jim because reminded him of his older brother who would often steal his food.
Good for him, dude.
He said he would leave food out for Jim when he'd go on like vacation or something. He'd have like a bowl for each day, like saran wrap over it, and Jim would like flick out one claw and like cut open the thing for each day and like feed himself autonomously or something.
That is a horrifying thought. Yeah.
That's a lot of
disturbing.
Yeah. That's a lot of control coming from one cat.
Well, we've got a guest. You can probably tell by her voice because she is the most, the most reoccurring guest on our podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. Technically, well, because she had the original episode where I was Alvin the Chipmunks because the sound crap.
That was great.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
It was such
that.
A great episode. And then we had the one.
I remember being out in the field. You called me. You're like, I got bad news. I got real bad news. And he's like, I sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks on this episode.
But everybody else sounded normal.
And so then my next question was, well, how'd I sound? You sound fine. Okay, well, don't worry about it, Nick.
Now that I think about it, that was so self-interest. So then we had the water quality episode. So yes. You were in not only a standalone there that hasn't been released yet, but also the actual documentary piece to it. And then now, so congratulations.
Plus, her name is at the intro of every podcast, every
that is
full
true.
Length podcast. That's right.
It's
in the montage.
What do you say?
No, it's like music and then a bunch of our guests. Some of our favorite and, of course, heavier hitters.
Oh, I see what you're
hitters.
Saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought I was like a part of your slogan. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Joy in the prairie or something. I was like,
just like Joy does.
Conservation just like Joy.
I was like, this is news to me.
Man, that's funny. Well, Kent, you got a topic today?
Yeah. I was hoping to have some more hard-hitting data, but I've been spending most of my day in the skid steer loading racks of seed in and out of our storage areas. So I did not get a chance to look up any data, but I wanted to talk a little bit about cover crops, and I know that's something near and dear to Joy's heart. So, you know, it's her first day doing coffee time with us. Need to make her feel at home here a little bit. But I know Joy has pushed cover crops very hard in our local area here and to a much greater audience through social media, but working with farmers in this area. And I think it's starting to, like, we're starting to see that. So I live out surrounded by farmland where I live. We have cover crops on our farm. The guy who cash rents my grandfather's ground that surrounds my house, I don't want to embarrass him, but something kind of funny happened. I couldn't figure out why the cover crops were in strips. Like, I was like, is this like something he's got a hypothesis about for erosion? Is he just trying to save money and do half the seed or something? No, a chain on one of the sprockets for the drill broke, and they're planting at night. And so they had no idea that it was broken for as long as it was.
Did you ask him this recently?
My grandfather did.
Oh, so he's like, okay.
What is up with the strips? And it was just it's kind of funny. But they look great this year, other than
you just thought he was a good Dutchman.
Just saving some money. But no, the crop that is there looks very good. And across the road, our other neighbor, the guy who's farming his ground, used them. I don't know if he did them last year. I think this might have been his first year. They look great. And just as even today, Nicholas and I were on the road, and
yeah.
Nicholas is like, man, look at those cover crops over there. They look great.
They did. They look like luscious fields.
Right.
Some of them look like darn turf grass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they look good.
And even last night when I was driving home, I follow the local deer herd very closely around my house because I like to hunt. And we are basically devoid of deer from December through March, or maybe, you know, depending on how warm or how soon it warms up. But last night, saw four deer out feeding in the cover crop. Nice. And so what I wanted to talk about for this week is, I don't have any data. Maybe next week. I just found this really cool website. Joy probably already knows about it, but maybe next week I'll have some data for us on cover crops. But I think I've used the phrase technically cover cropping before. And I use that phrase probably with
throwing out turf grass. Technically cover cropping.
I think Luke Fritsch and I probably exchanged a few hypothetical conversations and about technical cover crops, where you would see where landowners, farmers would be in a cover crop program, but as soon as the field would just start to look a hint of green, you know, they would spray it off. And we call it technical cover cropping because technically there were cover crops there. We got zero benefit from them at all. And we just used a whole bunch more herbicide to spray off the very minimal growth. But I think what I was worried about was that farmers would become frustrated because it's a newer thing. I mean, cover crops have been around for a long time, but in such widespread use, that's fairly recent. And I was worried farmers would become discouraged because it is a cost share program. So it's not necessarily a money making thing for them. I mean, there are carbon credits you can sign up for and so forth, but it's, you know, more fuel use, more, you know, you got, like I said, you got to use more herbicide to kill it off before you plant your other crop in there, your commodity in there. And I was worried that they would become discouraged by it not working very well. Like just the learning curve was too frustrating and they would quit doing it. But this spring, and it could just be because we had that really warm late winter, early spring, and things are growing better, and we've had some decent moisture this spring so far. Maybe that's why it's like skewing the visual data for me, but I really do think that I've seen more folks participating and doing it well this year, especially compared to last year.
I was going to ask Joy what you thought of cover crops this year compared to last year. And I also want, I thought it maybe
Let me finish what I was saying there first. So yeah, it could be visually.
That's what we do.
It could be visually, you know, it could, my visual qualitative data that I'm, you know, what I'm observing could be skewed by some different, like just better crop growing conditions so far this spring. But I really do think that farmers are figuring out when's that good time to frost seed, the fall before. They're letting it grow longer. Of course, that's controlled by, is it warm enough to spray or not too? But I think, and we have had a lot of overnight lows that are not favorable for applying glyphosate. But I do think that farmers are catching on, and I think that we're going to see cover crops become more and more beneficial, useful, and hopefully a positive impact on all the things that we put cover crops in the ground for.
Mm-hmm. No, I think there have been more cover crop acres in the state of Iowa. Like, it just, it keeps going up every year. But, like, that's going to happen, obviously, because there's more cost share available. There's more information and education available out there now of, like, why you want to do cover crops and the soil erosion benefits, the water quality benefits. Like, it's getting so much marketing that it does make sense that it is increasing. But, no, I've seen more. And, like you said, like, really nice stands where I'm like, I can't see an ounce of dirt in that row. Like, that thing is just matted. It's, yeah, they look really good.
Yeah. And it'll be fun too, because a question that's been asked a lot early, not as much now, but earlier when people were using it, like it, when it first started becoming widespread use, I don't know how to word that correctly. It's at the end of the day. Sorry. widely adopted. A question was, well, how does this affect wildlife? You know, and again, going back to Luke Fritsch, they've been doing cover crops for a while. They've been doing it well. His brother works for a conservation agency, but so he, I think he like helped coach him up on how to do it well. But he said one year when they were planting beans into some standing rye, he said it was like, you know, Armageddon for like rabbits and pheasants. You know, they're like running everywhere trying to get out of the way. And he's like, you know, I wonder if it's just this big tease for wildlife. You know, we're giving them this temporary habitat and then taken away. But the same thing really happens with corn. You know, when that gets harvested, there's a lot of deer and a lot of pheasants that spend a lot of time in cornfields.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think they're probably kind of used to that already, but I think too, just from a food standpoint, like it's putting a little bit more variety on the landscape that allows, you know, wildlife to make use of in that way too. So I think there's some other benefits that maybe we'll, as it gets more widely used, we'll be able to have a bigger pile of data in these other ways too that, you know, we can look at.
Man.
That's what I had for today. Sorry, no hard quantitative data.
No next hard quant. Just
it just got
feelings.
Me right in the feels though, man. Yeah.
Man, just, Joy's a big cover crop person. What do you?
I just love them.
Do you feel like cover crops are better this year, or are you not really noticing?
I definitely think the numbers are up.
Okay.
I would be curious to know if like the growth of them has been due to this weird like early onset spring where like we had the warm weather and then we got rain this past weekend, and now I'm like, I think the cover crops grew like 3 inches overnight.
Yeah,
like some of them just
they,
like
they
look
they really
fantastic.
Flushed forward, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like you always have to think too, what you see above ground is only a fraction of the benefits. Mm-hmm. Like really it's the roots under the soil that are doing like so much good too. So like the more you see up top, that's great. Like that's biomass and stuff after you kill it. But like the soil down there is having a party. Like they are just happy. It's a zoo of biological diversity and they're
you get
just
worms.
Like popping.
Well, you get worms if you have
more
cover crop.
Earthworms.
Because, well, the reasons because like
you don't ask people about getting worms.
Kent knows about getting worms.
Oh, whatever. It's called the tapeworm diet. You do the carnivore, I do the tapeworm. I mean, come on.
That would honestly be a very effective diet. We should try it, Kent.
The tapeworm
I'll do the carnivore.
Diet?
You do the tapeworm.
Just take in those parasites and let them do all the work for you.
Dude, that,
I think it builds character.
That's right.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you get something cool to put in a jar, you know, a month later.
We all have parasites.
Dude, I had a family member who went to the doctor once who, like, they
just
legitimately.
One time.
Yeah, for this one, yeah, basically. They thought they had a tapeworm, and they had some pretty strong evidence. And the doctor was frothing at the mouth, was so exciting. Because he was like, well, that'd be very unusual unless you've been to South America or something recently. He was so excited.
Was he like tapping his fingers together?
Yeah. I mean, basically, you know, he might have. But I don't know. I'm really into like popping zits and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
whoa.
I'm one of those guys.
This is true confessions here. Come on, man.
No,
okay,
dude.
Everyone did have that zit popping app on their phone growing up, though, and it was very satisfactory.
I never had such an app.
He wasn't in high school.
Wrong
when they had
generation.
Phones.
Wrong generation. He doesn't get
talking to a tree.
However, I have watched a few highlights from Dr. Pimple Popper, I must admit.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yes. Like, there's some satisfaction behind it. Yeah.
Lord, I think popping zits is directly connected to whatever dumps dopamine or serotonin or something in my brain. It's just
Anyway.
Nick needs to try drugs.
Yeah, I need more drugs.
If that is what gets your dopamine going.
Oh, man.
We're gonna see if you want to lift weights. Maybe that's a good dopamine.
Yeah, that's what I need.
I keep trying to tell him.
He's trying to get me to do it once a week. I'm not lifting weights just to be sore once a week.
I think that's a great idea.
No.
Yeah, he drives right by my house.
I've been trying to get my good friend Jose to do it with me. And we can do it in Pella.
Okay.
You want to come to Pella 3 times a week?
My address is Pella. I have free weights in my house. In both ways. Free.
But he doesn't
want to do it other mornings. He only wants to do it Thursday at like 2:30 in the morning.
No, I don't. Not at 2:30 in the morning. I will choose your time in the morning.
Okay. All right. And then what time are we doing it Monday and Tuesday?
You just do your own thing on those days.
Yeah, that gives you, and also then you can be flexible with the weather. If it's nice out, you want to go for a walk after work with your wife.
Yeah. See?
You can do it.
I don't like this peer pressure to be doing things that are good for me.
Well, now it's being recorded. That's right.
I really need to get more into working out. Last summer, I like ran. I trained for a half marathon, and this summer, I have not started doing anything.
That's an accomplishment, though. I've never done that.
And I ran a minute faster per mile than was my goal. So.
Yeah.
See, it was slow, but
guys are like that though. You guys work out twice and you have a six pack. It's like, are you kidding me? Oh,
I don't think Kent or I have ever had a six pack.
I got a pretty good one pack going.
Dude, there is this guy that I know that is very large, man. Awesome man. Very large. He told me, he's like, yeah, just 5 years ago I had a six pack. I was like, that, and so it was like a wake up call for me. I was like, you can go from being like, you know, fairly thin to, anyway, Joy, do you have a topic? Are you trying to get anything?
I'm just trying to peer pressure you into working out because I feel like it's for the common good, but you know.
Do you get Josh to work out with you?
No.
Oh, man.
And it's a point of contention. Oh. It is because I'm all about taking care of your body, right? Yeah. Your body is the temple. You only get one.
Yeah.
I better be able to hike a mountain with my grandkids when I'm 85. That's my long-term goal. Yeah. I don't look in the mirror and go, oh, it's my legs. I don't have a thigh gap. No, I'm like, can I crush a mountain at 85? That is full on my motivation. It is. And that's what I feel like will keep me successful. It's like, it's not about physical aesthetic or appearance to me. It's about like, I feel better. I sleep better. I do look better, but like, I want to be better.
Yeah.
Period. So no, that working out hasn't happened yet, but like it will.
Yeah,
you're listening, Josh. Well,
I believe you, and then Josh and I can do it together. I used to be like a huge workout, not guru. I wasn't a guru. I didn't know what I was doing, but I worked out all the time with Johnny Tisk and Peyton Scandridge, our good friend Peyton Scandridge. We worked out all the time. That's just what we did 4 or 5 times a week. Yeah.
When you're a kid, that's like what we did in high school.
Yeah.
Because you had to do it for gym class, so you knew how to do it. So then you did it for sports, and it was just like part of your life.
Yeah. And yeah. So congrats on carrying the tradition forward and the discipline. That was a big deal. Do you have a real topic? You don't have to. We put you totally on the spot with this today.
I have a topic that I hope Joy talks about.
Oh, yes. Please.
Just ask it, then.
The Mighty Nish out in western Iowa.
Tell us what you think. Tell us your true thoughts.
That's just a very sad, upsetting thing.
Can you explain it first?
So here in March, was it?
Just like two and a half weeks ago, I think, is when I first saw a post on it.
But did it happen in March? Like, did the occurrence happen?
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
So there was a co-op, an unnamed co-op, that got caught dumping a ton of nitrogen. When I mean a ton, I mean 1.4 million
Tons.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Because
it was
like
bad.
3 million tons, but then if you take the percent, because liquid nitrogens or liquid fertilizers are like 28 to 40 some percent nitrogen, so then you take that and it's like, okay, it's only actually 1.4. Only 1.4.
Yeah. That was their defense. It was like, well, it's mostly water.
Into the river. Which
what river?
To put that the one I can't say.
The Nishnabotna River.
Yes.
It's a
Nickadabox.
We're speaking in tongues here on the podcast. Oh my goodness.
It's a smaller tributary that probably dumps into the Missouri.
It dumps in the Missouri, yes.
Yep. So it'd probably be like a mid to a large tributary going into the Missouri here in Iowa.
And it's already impaired. Like, it's, you know, had its mm-hmm. issues. So doing this is just like another cherry on top of the cake for this poor river.
So they dumped 3 million tons like overnight, or they got caught, they've been doing it for a while.
I think it was in a short time frame. I can't say if it was overnight, but it wasn't like over the years. Like, this like just happened.
Oh, wow.
And that's $500,000 worth of fertilizer. So like keep that in perspective of that's just going down the river, and like it's cost them $500,000, but clearly it doesn't bother them. Yeah. And they got fined $6,000.
Which is enough to do nothing.
Which is like a mosquito bite on an elephant's butt. Like, that is nothing. Do you know what I mean?
That is so crazy. Yeah. Why? Why did they only get fined $6,000?
Politics.
I can't. So
water quality should. It's the one thing in the world that should never be political.
Yeah,
right. It's clean.
You think
water.
That the like science on water quality would be like very black and white? Like there are a few things where like not sure if it's bad to drink in water, but most things it's like, yeah, you don't want that in your water. It's okay to have this. You don't want that. You know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very black and white.
Why bring politics?
There's a huge fish kill associated with it as well, right? I think it was a 60-mile stretch of water where there was a major kill. And so the person who I saw first post about it was our friend Tabitha over at IPN, Tabitha Panis, and she just shared a news article, and she is either her or somebody else who commented on it that said, you know, people will see the fish, but what we won't see is the, you know, the invertebrate life, all the microscopic
invertebrates
of that ecosystem. You know, they're gone, you know, as well, or a lot of them are. And then the other thing too, is there are some things that survive, you know, like what we talk about, if there was like a nuclear winter, what would still be here? You know, it'd be like raccoons and
cats.
Norwegian rats and feral cats, right? That'd be like the world, and cockroaches. Those would be the things that would survive, right? So that when you have that major outside, you know, catastrophic event on an ecosystem, there's some players that do hang on and thrive, and now their population can dominate for years going forward. And that's never good. Even if it is like a native species that's doing it, it's just like,
it's out of balance.
Right. It's like Pennsylvania smartweed. It's a native forb that I would argue is actually rather pretty, but it has taken over when allowed to on our landscape, mm-hmm. That in this post-prairie landscape. So
it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a bad deal.
No, it's upsetting. And typically it only gets attention when there is a fish kill, because then it's an obvious, right. visible, like something's wrong here. And then they trace it back, and then it's like, oh, now you're getting fined. But sometimes there's a lot of people that are getting mm-hmm. away with dumping fertilizer in our water systems, and they're not getting caught. So that's another issue in my mind.
So why do they do that? They just don't have a place to put it?
Was it an accidental spill, or was it... I can't remember how it was worded in the
article. It was kind of worded in a way where it's like maybe a little bit was an oopsie, and then some of it was maybe negligence. I don't know. It's kind
how
of
do
hard
you
to say.
Accidentally spill 3 million tons? Well, like, how many tons fit in one semi, what, like 20?
Let me pull up the article here, because
I can find the article too.
Look up the article that you shared yesterday, Joy, and I'll look up the one that Tabitha posted.
Okay. I literally sent it to my boyfriend today.
Yeah, it's a... man, I did a terrible job spelling that.
Nishinabakanawa.
Nick, you have to come up with some kind of commentary right now.
Oh, okay.
You share.
Wait,
your,
I think I found information. I'm very quick like that.
Yes. Good with the thumbs.
Yes. So find $6,000, which, by that way, that amount of fertilizer is enough to fertilize 10,000 acres of corn.
Wow.
Yep. 3 million pounds. Okay, so not tons. We screwed up on that.
Okay.
Pounds.
That makes more sense.
I always think of things in tons, though.
Yeah.
1,500 tons, 3 million pounds, which then, of course, you break down the formulation of liquid nitrogen, 46% nitrogen within those formulas, meaning that it's 1.4 million pounds of nitrogen released.
Which is still truckloads and truckloads.
Well, to put it in perspective, for some of my work, which has been essentially mitigating nitrogen from going to the system, they basically completely reversed the last 3 years of my work like that. Like 3 years of what I have been doing to help keep sediment, nitrogen from our stream systems was undone in a single accident like this.
Yeah, that would be wildly upsetting.
Like, it makes a very generous word. And that's why I was like, I was hot about it when I found out about it this morning with Josh. I was like, you would not believe. I was like,
so are they like, it's like, is it like seeping into the ground and then it's part of the watershed, so it's getting in there? Well, or is it?
So here, I found the thing that I first saw, and it was on, this was posted on March 12th. And it too says 1500 tons of fertilizer that spilt, is how they said it, or spilled into the river. So I think it was, well, I guess I don't know enough to say how it got there, but my guess is wherever this fertilizer was deposited, it was already very close to the river. And, you know, you have a rain event, you know, then it's in there. And sometimes, you know, you'll see it when you're driving down the road, farmers will get fertilizer dropped off in their field and it'll be.
Yeah, but this is liquid nitrogen, right?
We're talking about liquid fertilizer.
Liquid fertilizer. Oh, okay.
Okay. So, so I was thinking of like, you know, where you'll have like a solid fertilizer. It'll be dropped in a field because they know the farmer's going to, in short time, come and scoop it up and apply it evenly over the.
Yeah. And that makes more sense. I don't know. That's mind-boggling.
Liquid fertilizer, that is very much more concerning to me than what I thought. I mean, I guess I don't know if you had like maybe leaky hoses or a bad, you know, bad tank or something like that. I really don't know what there needs to be some serious explaining done there. Yeah.
It says the leak was ongoing for 2 days before it was discovered.
Okay, so it's like a tank leak or something?
Perhaps.
Mm. Okay, like, that makes more sense.
You can see that happening too because what's underneath of co-op? Cement. Cement is going to just, it's not going to absorb in water, so that liquid is just going to run off to the nearest system that it does, and everything leads to a river. So, and you're not going to catch, if you don't catch it,
Oh, okay, so that's a different light on the subject because we were talking about maybe them dumping it or getting rid of it, but if they lost $500,000 worth of...
They're probably not happy about it either.
Yeah. My guess is that it hurt them heavily financially, or at the very least, they had to get insurance involved or something.
Right, and then it does change things as far as, you know, what's to blame here, right? Everyone's going to want to blame this co-op, and sure, they deserve some level of that blame, right? It's their equipment, it's their product. I mean, you have a responsibility there, of course. But at the same time, as long as we keep making it make sense for companies to have so much fertilizer on hand at all times, because that's the system that we support with our dollars and technically our votes, then it's going to keep making sense to have these huge vats of fertilizer stored where accidents like this can happen. Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, there's some blame there on the consumer. And even as Joy was alluding to, and you too, Nicholas, as far as what should be the most apolitical thing, should be water quality. But the truth of the matter is it's not. That's not an apolitical thing.
Mm-hmm. Because it gets in the way of people making money.
Right. And it makes no sense for it not to be, but it is. And so that again comes back on us as citizens of, hey, we need to demand better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then
I mean, it makes sense though, because things that are political are things that have to do with money, because people with big money try to wall their business in. If they have a big enough business, they'll try to wall it in with government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You're right though. It is our job as consumers to be like, hey, this isn't okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's do something about it.
Yeah. I know someone who doesn't actually buy ethanol gas because they're so against how corn, like the system and the process of corn in the state of Iowa. They're like, it says it's cleaner for Iowa air, but actually Tom Philpott talks about this. There's actually evidence to show that that isn't necessarily true.
Because of the processing plant?
The
process of growing corn is so dirty. You know,
yeah. There's so many byproducts.
Think of how many of our water quality problems, our air quality problems, our soil quality problems go back to we're corning so many acres that should not be corned.
And then pound for pound, it's only about 2/3 as efficient as oil. Now, I'm not saying we should just burn tons and tons of oil. That's not the solution. But just the argument that it's actually not maybe as clean as
it's a good case of greenwashing.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're really far into this, but I got to get to my topic. We got to do it this week. My topic is about Joy. People don't know this. Joy is joining our team. Because for several reasons, but one of them is to help ramp up the podcast. Hoping to get, I'm not saying anything about our past guests. Our past guests have been amazing. We've made really, really good friends, but really high quality guests. We're trying to pursue more of those. We're trying to pursue video and some other things. And we're trying to change more minds towards conservation. And we think Joy could be a really big part of it.
And minds have been changing, and we've been moving some seed. And so Nicholas and I are super busy handling seed. Yeah. So we need
Joy's
some help.
Perfect person. What is it? Like _ Joy of All Trades _ on Instagram.
Yes,
if you're
great
interested
follow.
In her, like what she's about, that's the place to find her out. She'll be hanging out with us on our team. And we're really excited to have you. Thanks for hanging out. So I don't know how often she'll be on the podcast. Maybe a lot, maybe not very often. Who knows?
Hopefully we can get at least a couple coffee times out of her every month.
I do love coffee. So.
Yeah. Speaking of loving coffee, you probably haven't had it yet. Wild Rivers Coffee, we'll get you some. They're our sponsors, and we let them be our sponsors because they...
We like good coffee.
We like good coffee. And at least 2%, if not more, of every single sale goes to some conservation organization. And they say with different bags that you buy, you get there are different organizations that get the money. So they're a super cool organization.
Yeah,
get your coffee from them.
I gotta order my signature blend maybe this very weekend because I am running out of my Guatemalan blend, and then I will have tried all of them.
How do you guys drink your coffee? This is a personality question, so don't disappoint me.
I drink it the sociopathic way, black
and cold.
And
what?
Well, not. I wouldn't even say cold. I'd say room temp.
even worse. Yeah. Admit them. Admit them now.
Very tepid. What's that verse in the Bible about lukewarm? I don't see what's so bad about lukewarm. But
God says the biblical thing is to spit it out of your mouth, and here it is. Kent, just
want to hear a funny thing? So our friend Travis Frank will enjoy this because of the whole story behind my name. He calls me Sig now. So my maternal.
If anybody calls in, please call him Sig.
My maternal. Family name, like surname, is Terlau, and Terlau means lukewarm.
Beautiful.
And
hold
if up. You go back, so we're getting close to
your main what Terlau?
Yeah, I'm a Terlau.
Yeah, Kent's like cousins with everyone here.
You realize that my mom's a Terlau?
Oh, really?
Wait, how did I not know this?
So evidently, Joy and I are cousins.
this
podcast are brings families together.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah,
anyways.
So where he lives now is where the Terlau family is from. So he's for sure related to you.
Well, it's not. We can talk about it after the podcast.
That's crazy.
But a family reunion here on the Prairie Farm podcast. But
this is great.
But yeah, so it means lukewarm. And you can actually hear the story behind that name and why Dutch people have such sarcastic last names. If you go back to our tulip time interview with Valvin Coten.
Oh, yeah.
So all you fellow Pelanians out there, or however you call it, Pelanese?
Pelicans.
Maybe,
Pelicans.
We prefer Pelican,
Pelicans. I like Pelanese. That sounds kind of good.
Pelanese.
But you can hear the story on why all of us all of us Dutch folk have our sarcastic last names, and it is almost tulip time. We're like,
it is almost tulip time.
A month away.
Mine's not sarcastic. Mine's just alcoholic. It means from the vineyard. So yeah. I don't think that's sarcasm. I think that's just.
That's good. Mine's not. Mine means lily, the flower, Lirio.
Yeah. It's a great name. Nicholas was bragging about his name to me the other day.
Dude, I have just the best name in the world. I do. But I.
Lirio, it's cute. Sounds like Cheerio.
Yeah. And my first name means victory of the people. My middle name means king. And my last name means lily. I think that's victory of the people.
That's pretty good.
Isn't that right?
Ours means lukewarm. Like, what the heck? Are you
kidding? It's a little arrogant, though. Like, victory of the people. Like, I am the people's victory. I am the epitome of all humans.
That's the most Donald Trump name I've ever heard. I just ruined your name for you. Yes.
No, it's the ruined. Most Donald Trump name I've ever heard is Donald Trump. But I drink my coffee, shots of espresso.
Oh, my guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got it from Smokey Row, from Joey and I's time working together at Smokey Row.
Work reunion, family reunion.
We'd get there at 5:30 in the morning, and what do? You're not awake because you went to bed last night playing video games at 1:30. You take a couple shots of espresso.
Do you like it with cream or sugar or just?
No, not normally. Really? I just crank it.
Yeah, you guys are both psychopaths. Fantastic. <That's right. laughs>
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
that's fair.
But I go through the whole process of grinding it, and then I put it in the Chemex, you know, with a little filter. Yeah, you guys quit using those coffee brewers out there.
No, we use a Chemex at our house.
Good. Yeah. I'm just saying, if you're out there using
I use a normal coffee brewer, but I grind my beans.
Okay, that's
so
good.
So does that at least like make
it's just the brewers get like such a plasticky taste, and they get mildew and stuff like that. You know.
Yeah.
But I would not use a coffee brewer if I like. Yeah. Anyway.
It's the old farmer in me. Sorry.
Yeah. I did it for years too, but then I got hooked on Chemex. Yeah.
Well, we're really excited to hang out with you, Joy, where Kent's really excited for his Wild Rivers coffee.
That's right.
Cold and lukewarm, all in the same.
And hey, that's how good it is.
We are excited to hang out with you guys again sometime. Thanks for joining.